In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
There is a natural order to things. And all too often when things go bad, it's because that natural order, somewhere along the lines, was violated. Or worse, corrupted. Think of one of the most basic elements of the natural order, the family. A dad, a mom, and the kids. For thousands of years, this has been the basic building block of society. The larger society depends on moms and dads raising kids in a way that better enable the next generation to be successful, to do more, to accomplish more than their parents did. And, naturally, parents want their kids to be more successful and make sacrifices to make that happen. And as kids become adults and build on the previous generation's success, society is advanced. You see it in the sciences and other professions. Each generation learns and advances the professional fields, adding new learning to existing knowledge, and so on it goes. But in the last few decades, and especially the last few years, the natural order of things has come under increasing attack, to the point that if you even mention that there even is a natural order, you will come under ridicule. You know it's true. Set aside the marginalization of men and fatherhood, and especially masculinity. Set aside the defeminization of women and devaluing of women to the point where men are competing in women's sports, and certain elements of society are okay with this. Setting those aside, it is the direct attack on children and the next generation that is the most concerning, because unless it is stopped, it will tear society apart. And that's really the goal, though, isn't it? Worse, there are laws already passed and others in the making that will insert government between you and your child, to make parents the bad guys and have kids look to government for their safety and mental security, completely dismissing spirituality along the way, of course. If this sounds horrifying, if this sounds terrifying, it should be. Government taking over parenting has never worked. And this sort of the government knows your child better than you do thinking is not new. In the 1930s, Nazi Germany wanted to completely overtake child rearing. And even after the war, those theories continued to take root in academia, and they've been slowly gaining traction in society, especially in the last couple of decades, and especially with elected Democrats. Anyone remember Hillary's, "It takes a village to raise a child"? The only way to stop this is to change who is in office. The same Democrats who are okay with pushing sex at kids in kindergarten are not going to stop if you get mad. They will simply change tactics and hide it from you more than they already have. It's not enough to just get mad. You have to drive them, all of them, from public office at every level. Speaking of Hillary, there is a lawsuit that just dropped. We'll be talking about that in the second half of our show, so be sure to stick around for that as we talk with best-selling author and former prosecutor Scott McEwen all about that. But first, I'd like to welcome Dr. Angela Plowhead to the show. She is running for Republican nomination for U.S. Congress in the newly created CD6, but first she has to get past about a half dozen fellow Republicans in the primary. Angela, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. So we want to find out a lot about you. You're kind of an unknown to us. And so let's tell our audience a little bit about you. You hold a master's and doctorate in clinical psychology from George Fox University, my alma mater as well. But you started your career in the Air Force as a signals intelligence analyst. So what is a signals intelligence analyst? What did you do?
So with signals intelligence, we are monitoring and analyzing communications data. And that comes in all different kinds of forms. And so we're making all kinds of decisions about what's going to happen and with that data and what our military is going to do as far as targeting it or exploiting it or destroying it.
Hmm. Very interesting. So now you're running for Congress. You had a career there. You still have a career as a psychologist. What led you to run for office? Are there just too many crazy people in Congress? You couldn't just pass up that opportunity?
So, you know, with my job as an intelligence analyst, what I got to see for all of my target nations were nations that were either totalitarian or communistic. And when I started to see the characteristics of those regimes be displayed in our own federal government and starting to implement those same kinds of policies against our own people here in America, on American soil, that was too much. It had gone too far. So it went from, you know, having politicians that sounded kind of crazy with the communistic kind of soft speak, but then to actually start implementing them on people, that was when I said, you know, enough is enough. We need people to stand up before we are dealing with full-blown communism here in America.
And any policies in particular that had jumped out at you? I mean, are you talking about the COVID mandates, or is there something even before that?
Yeah, so what happened during the pandemic was really shocking to me. When I started to see shelves with no food on them, when I started to see people being locked in their homes, literally locked in their homes, you know, and I'm a geropsychologist, so, you know, most of my patients are elderly, and people were literally being held in their residence without being able to see other people. And so, you know, that to me was it's a precursor. And then to be told that your government is going to be in charge of your health care, and then you can lose your job for whether or not you engage in health care practices.
Right.
All of those things adding up, where these are things that you see in communist countries. These are not things you see in America.
No, like you, we were equally shocked. And I guess one of the things that was so shocking to my wife and I was that how quickly that was set on us and how quickly people folded and just accepted it as par for the course, that it's somehow okay that our government completely stripped you of your rights. You know, I used to think that we lived in a free country. Now, having seen what our government is capable of and what they were allowed to get away with, I'm not so sure anymore. What sets you apart, you think, from some of your primary opponents? What makes you the better choice for Republicans in CD6?
So beyond just my military experience, you know, I went from being in the military, and not just being in the military, but being in intelligence in the military. So having a sense of, you know, what it looks like in wars, how we utilize that data, how important that data is, but also how our military operates. So I went from that to then serving in VA for about 12 years in different capacities. And so having a sense of how our government operates healthcare, as well as how just working within the federal system and how our government works on all kinds of different levels, those are experiences that I have that no one else brings to this race. And as a psychologist, I feel like I have a really good handle on a lot of the things that are happening here in our nation right now, psychologically, and the psychological warfare that, honestly, that's being used against the American people to ready us for tougher measures by our government.
Absolutely. In fact, let's go ahead and take a break there, but psychological warfare, I definitely want to talk to you about that in the next segment. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Angela Plowhead. She is running for Congress in the newly created CD6. That's on the western side of the Willamette Valley. If you'd like to visit her website and find out more about her, you can go to Angela4Oregon. That's F-O-R, Angela4Oregon.com. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Angela Plowhead, Dr. Angela Plowhead. She is running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Congress in the newly created CD6. And we were talking during the break there, you actually just finished a book, too, Empowered to Lead. Tell our audience a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it is a book about women taking leadership roles in the church, but just generally in life as well. And so acknowledging what their gifts are and having people around them that are going to acknowledge and support them so that we can all work in unity together.
Hmm. Well, that sounds really interesting. And that's available through Amazon and whatnot, I take it?
It's going to be available through Amazon right now. It's available on our website, empoweredtolead.us.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, we'll make sure that we link that up as well on iSpyRadio.com. And so going on to that last break there, you mentioned psychological warfare. This has been a hot button issue for us as we have watched this with really horror, what has been unleashed against our own citizens in terms of conditioning them to do different things. Talk to us a little bit about psychological warfare from the perspective as a doctor in clinical psychology.
Yeah, well, you just hit the nail on the head right there. So, you know, we have watched as we have had these, it started out with just the lockdown, right? And then it went from there to what was happening with all of the food pieces. So then we had to be reliant on the government to let us know how we were going to eat, when we could go places, where we could find safety, right? So it all goes back to this idea of safety and government being the only ones that could provide safety for us. And then we started to see things like, or we saw what happened with Afghanistan, and we saw a top general tell Congress that he could not question an order. Well, having been in the Air Force, I can tell you that the very first thing that you're taught is that you need to question an unlawful order.
Isn't that something?
If you do not question an unlawful order, then you can be imprisoned for it. You are held responsible regardless of whether or not the order came from someone else. So that we have top generals in the United States telling us that they cannot question an order, what that says is that anything that comes down from on high, they will have to do. The military will have to do. That's also a subtle message to our troops that if there's something that comes down from on high, you have to do it. And then we saw three generals write letters to different news organizations warning the American people that at this next election, there's something coming and you need to be prepared. And so what they're preparing people for is for military action against the American people.
I've been very concerned about that. And I've also been very concerned watching what's happening within the military itself. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we saw the police up in Canada literally trample old women. And somehow that was dismissed as being perfectly okay, even though that they were there protesting the lack of freedom. And then they used these kind of totalitarian techniques on them. But yeah, I am very concerned about what I'm hearing out of the media or out of the military in terms of what they may or may not end up doing to civilians. I think that's very scary for sure. And plus, you really mentioned this notion in terms of we have to look to the government for safety. I mean, that kind of conditioning, it sounds an awful lot like Stockholm syndrome, where the person essentially being held against their will ends up kind of falling in love with, or however you want to put it, with their captors. And also this notion that you can't question science. That was the other big conditioning, we have the official science, we have the official narrative, and you better not dare question that, whether that's medical science or any other kind of science. That's the business of science, is to question science. And yet we saw that from top to bottom, you couldn't question science.
I saw there was a published article by some scientists that had done a very scientifically good study about what had happened during the pandemic or during the initial coronavirus with deaths and what that looked like versus deaths from the virus and deaths from the vaccination. And that had been released, and then they withdrew it.
Yes.
That never happens in science.
No, I remember that.
Never happens.
Yep, I remember that.
And so, you know, that you are silencing the people that are actually out there investigating and scientifically approaching and looking at what's happening and then telling them that their science is no good because they don't like the result. We're seeing an entire shift in what's happening in medical science to fit the narrative of whatever political view is in demand.
Yes, and that is so dangerous when you have science essentially spreading propaganda or whatever message it is that the government wants to do. I mean, science is supposed to stand as a bastion against that.
Absolutely.
Crazy. of course, you would know what crazy looks like. Speaking of which, you're a psychologist, and we had interviewed Dr. John DePaola, an orthopedic surgeon who was running in CD5 last week. And he had some rather interesting experiences in dealing with COVID and the government overreach. And in particular, the government geniuses had stopped people who needed orthopedic surgeries from being able to get them. They're just keeping them out of clinics. So what was some of your experiences dealing with government overreach in the COVID era or government overreach into your field in general?
So in psychology, what we have seen is the same sort of things that you've seen in other medical practices, where there are still people, still psychologists that aren't seeing people in person. We've seen a lot of the same things in psychology as we have with other disciplines, but we were a little bit better prepared because we already were doing telehealth. I know in my clinic, I'm a small business owner, and so in my clinic, we had already had that set up, so it was a very easy transition for us, and we still do some of that. But we've also seen things like the psychology boards or other kinds of medical boards tying licenses to coronavirus policies. So you can't be licensed unless you are following, you know, governmental policy related to coronavirus and vaccination and masking and those kinds of things. So, you know, that's kind of scary because you know, we have seen lots of different evidence about what happens to someone's body, you know, once they have had the vaccination, and which again, and a lot of that evidence has tried to been covered up.
Very much.
So we,
Actually, I'd like to talk to you more in depth about that licensing issue. So let's go ahead and take a break there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Angela Plowhead. She is running for Congress in Oregon's CD6. We'll be right back. And welcome back. We're talking today to Dr. Angela Plowhead. She is running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Congress in the newly created CD6. That's the western side of Marion and Linn County and heading west into Polk and Yamhill and a little narrow corridor up through Washington County into the outskirts of Portland, because Portland didn't dominate enough congressional districts already. So, Dr. Plowhead, we were talking, going out of that last break there, about some of the licensing issues. So why don't you go ahead and pick up with that?
Well, I think we're going into very dangerous territory when you have a licensing board that says that a provider has to have certain medical procedures in order to practice.
Right.
And so it's doing the same kinds of things that the school has done now with teachers, saying that if you aren't vaccinated, then you can't teach, and then firing our teachers. And now we have a situation where up in Portland, they've lost so many teachers that they're having to close down certain aspects of school. And so, and we've seen that in other districts as well, where there weren't enough teachers to fill vacancies or to do subbing. And so they had to shut days off for students. So kids that were already dealing with learning loss then had additional days out of school this year because of the decision that our governor made to mandate vaccination and then terminate teachers for not getting vaccinated.
Well, one of the things that I find to be especially egregious with the psychology board pushing these coronavirus policies, and especially regarding masking, and that you could potentially lose your license if you weren't following those, there was a study out of Brown University. I don't know if you saw that or not, but they found that there was a 23% decline in the cognitive abilities of kids post-pandemic, during the middle of the pandemic versus pre-pandemic. And a large part of that was those masking policies and some of the other policies that they pushed on kids in schools. And so how is it that on the one hand, they're saying you could lose your license if you're doing these things, but on the other, what they're pushing is essentially going against science? I don't understand how they could do that as a professional board. That, to me, that's just nonsense.
Well, and so, and speaking of science and what that says that's contradictory to what to this mandate or to this licensing requirement is that there's now been a study that has come out, which we all knew was common sense, but that masking keeps you from being able to interpret emotions on someone's face.
Yes, and that's so really important.
As a psychologist,
that's really important for kids as they're growing.
It's important for kids as you're growing, and it's important as for a psychologist to be able to interpret the emotions on their client's face so that they can assist them. So it doesn't make sense, a lot of these things that are happening. And, you know, like I said, goes right back to the issue of freedom. And so, you know, that's the biggest thing on my platform. If we don't have our constitutional freedoms, then we're not going to be able to do things like have our children have good education and be able to choose their own occupation. We are not going to be able to work in our occupations the way we have been, and it touches every single aspect of our lives.
Yes. Oh, it absolutely does. And one of the other things that we're seeing more and more is the impact on kids, not just from the masking and all that. And now we're seeing some just absolutely terrible things out of these woke corporations, and in particular what happened down there in Florida. This is really one of the reasons, among others, that why we definitely wanted to have you on, because your unique skills and training intersects with this major topic now with education, that there's been a massive push by these woke corporations, shockingly Disney among them, that are launching major offenses at school children when it comes to sex and sexuality. And this constant hypersexualization that is being shoved at kids. I mean, Florida just passed a bill that prevents teaching kindergarten through third grade about sex, including gay sex and other topics. And the Democrats and Disney were just outraged at this. I mean, what is your take on this nonstop and frankly, rather creepy attempt to constantly shove very adult topics on the very young?
I think it is creepy. And so, you know, what we are doing is setting these children up to be groomed. And we are seeing that. Now, we have had 3 arrests in the last week of educators in Oregon. There was one out of Tillamook, there was one in McMinnville, and there was one in Salem-Keizer related to crimes against children related to sex. And so we have to be very careful with what we're doing and what we're expecting of children. Children's brains are not developed to the point where these are okay topics. We talk about child appropriate education and, you know, teaching a child, you know, what their body is and what their body does. That's one thing. Teaching them how to masturbate should not be a piece of that.
No, it sure shouldn't. And it comes across more like it's these adults with some kind of weird twisted fantasy wanting to push that on kids. I don't ever remember a time of when they were, in particular, the Democrats have been so focused on pushing this kind of stuff at the very youngest kids. I just think that's going to do an awful lot of damage. And then on top of that, you've got now they're pushing gender dysphoria on these kids and kind of almost encouraging that. Talk to our audience a little bit about that.
So about the gender dysphoria pushing?
Well, both the fact that it's happening, but they're also almost encouraging that.
Absolutely. So prior to this big push for transgenderism, the rate of transgenderism was about 0.005%. And, you know, now we have entire swaths of children, especially girls, that are being encouraged to explore being another sex. And so, you know, we're essentially feeding into a delusion. And we're not just feeding into it. We're encouraging these children to have delusions. Now, you ask a 5-year-old what they want to be when they grow up, and they'll tell you all kinds of things. But yet you're wanting a 5-year-old to tell you whether or not they're a boy or a girl. You know, I know when my kids were 5, they would tell me that they were a dog, you know, or a dinosaur or whatever it was. But you don't feed that.
No.
Don't encourage them to, okay, you're a dog, you're a dinosaur. No, you know. You let them play, you let them have imagination, but that's part of what imagination is. Yeah. It's exploring all different kinds of worlds. But then we don't say, okay, well, now that you've said that, we're going to give you a pill that's going to permanently alter your physiology.
It's just absolutely horrifying. It really is. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. I think we're going to have you back on before the primary is over, because we just scratched the surface there with you. Dr. Angela Plowhead, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me on, Mark. I appreciate it.
If you'd like to find out more about Angela and her campaign, her website is simply angela4oregon, that's F-O-R, angela4oregon.com. Up next, remember all those cheers of lock her up at Trump rallies? Well, that could be one step closer as Trump launches a RICO lawsuit against Hillary Clinton. We'll talk about that next with best-selling author and attorney Scott McEwen. In case you missed it, President Trump filed a lawsuit against Hillary to sue her for her role and about 50 other people for their roles in the great Russia collusion hoax that started in the shadow of Hillary's email scandal. We know for a fact that the intelligence agencies knew it was a hoax thanks to John Brennan taking careful handwritten notes at a White House meeting at which he was briefing Obama, Comey, the head of the FBI, and Clapper, the head of National Intelligence, and Vice President Joe Biden, what Hillary was up to, and that the CIA had learned from Russia sources, no less, that Hillary planned to smear Trump with Russia collusion. It was after that meeting that the intelligence agencies busily got to work to spread the word, spread the lie that Trump was an agent of Russia, and now Trump is suing them. To talk about this and more, I'd like to welcome back Scott McEwen. He's the New York Times bestselling co-author of American Sniper. Scott, it is great to talk to you.
Good to be back on with you guys. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I should mention you've got your own series of books out there, too, and all of those are linked up on iSpyRadio.com. He has some great books out there. You definitely want to add those to your summer reading list that's coming up fast. So, Scott, the uniqueness of Trump's lawsuit, perhaps, is that it invokes RICO, and you have read the entire complaint, but let's actually start with RICO. What exactly is RICO for our listening audience?
It's an acronym for a statute, a federal statute that came out a number of years ago called Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organization. And it was really designed to take on the mafia and drug dealing organizations where you had multiple different actors, players, predicate acts, and things of that nature. And basically, it was the way for the government to come after people in a harder, bigger way. But it also allowed for a civil private right of action, which is what has been filed by Trump against Hillary in Florida and others, which is essentially saying there was a series of predicate acts, some of which you just went over, which factually have been determined as truth mm-hmm. at this juncture. Mm-hmm. And then they are tying that into the RICO statute to say that those predicate acts sufficiently meet the standards for the RICO statute to bring a private right of action and all the penalties that go with it, civil penalties, including treble damages, punitive damages, attorney's fees, costs, et cetera.
So is there something about invoking RICO that makes this lawsuit either unique or gives it added weight or maybe even likelihood of success?
You know, it's interesting because I'm not aware of a published federal case that said that you can invoke the RICO Act under these circumstances. In other words, I'm not sure that we have a decision on that. However, I do know that Hillary was served and sued under the same RICO statute under a private right of action, but it was on a public private right of action. When I say I can distinguish the two, a number of years ago for her illegal server that she had and that was established in her house. And this same judge that we're dealing with right now, how that happened, I do not know. But the same judge that dealt with that case is dealing with this case, exactly the same case, and he dismissed it.
Now, wasn't that a Clinton appointee? I think I heard Trump say that.
Yes, it's a Bill Clinton appointee. Yeah. So the first, motion that you can expect in this case, and I haven't seen it filed yet, but you can anticipate it's going to be filed, is by Trump to probably challenge the judge for what bias is basically what's going to happen.
Sure. And
I imagine the judge is probably going to deny that motion. And then the next motion you're going to see is a motion to dismiss. Whether it survives that or not, really, we're going to see that this case is going to go up to the appellate court and probably be determined at that level.
Hmm. So part of this lawsuit here, what about the fact that you had private contractors working with the Hillary campaign while Trump was president and accessing those White House servers? I mean, how is that not some level of crime or even treason at this point? Or is that just all being lumped into this? And the reason I ask this is because apparently they're looking at dropping another lawsuit. But I mean, is that being discussed within this lawsuit, these private contractors basically sabotaging Trump from within the White House?
It's certainly part of the allegations here, Mark. And, you know, that's what's fascinating. And, you know, and frustrating for me as a citizen, as well as someone who believes in the legal system, is, you know, the fact of the matter is we know now that that was what's going on. And we know from Durham's investigation that these guys continued the surveillance of the Trump campaign after he was elected to president.
Yes.
Which is espionage. And that's basically espionage. There's no way you can cut or wrap that differently. And that's one of the things Durham is going over right now. But the fact of the matter is the predicate acts that are alleged in this lawsuit, in other words, all of the facts that lead to the causes of action for RICO, et cetera, the actual violations that they're alleging, have all been factually established. The falsity of the original of the original, allegations that came out of the Russians, et cetera, or this report, this dossier that came out of them. All these things have been established as not only false, but we also know now that they were false with the knowledge of the FBI, with the knowledge of Comey, et cetera.
Yep.
And they didn't do a darn thing about it.
Nope, they did not. And that's something that Kash Patel had mentioned on an interview with Charlie Kirk, which is that this is really a huge problem for the Clinton Foundation, the Clintons, and everybody else that's named within that lawsuit, is that you're right, is there are already judicial rulings essentially in favor of Trump on these because they have been found criminally liable in some cases.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the predicate facts, that's what I find very interesting about the left-wing press when describing the Trump lawsuit and the Trump, whatever, is that it's all bad, it's all fake, it's all this. No, every single thing alleged in it have been established.
Right.
I mean, the factual allegations are established. And so really the only question is, are those actionable under RICO statute or not?
Hmm. Could he essentially refile this under different statutes other than RICO if this does get dismissed by the Clinton-appointed judge?
Well, certainly. And there are other allegations within this lawsuit which do not need RICO. In other words, there's certain wiretapping and other allegations in here that are crimes in and of themselves and are actionable civilly. So even if the RICO part of this were to be dismissed, there are other allegations made in this, civil allegations made in this, that of damages suffered by Trump and others as a result of illegal acts that are actionable. So I think there are several ways this lawsuit continues, even if the RICO allegations are not the primary, if you will, vehicle to bring them before a judge or jury.
Hmm. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back. We'll be continuing to discuss the Trump lawsuit with author Scott McEwen. Coming back, we'll be talking about some of the problems lying ahead. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Scott McEwen. He's the co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, American Sniper, with Chris Kyle. He also has his own series of books out there, and we'll dive into those a little bit in the next segment there. But Scott has read the full Trump lawsuit, the RICO lawsuit against the Hillary campaign and a bunch of others. What is there, Scott, about 50 or some people mentioned in this?
I think there's 24 named defendants, and then they have does 1 through 20 and several of the cause of action. So at this stage, there's somewhere between, I believe, 20 and 25 people actually named.
Okay. So, as I said in my opener in that last segment, this really should be, I think, the easiest, most slammiest slam dunk in the history of slam dunks, because we know that John Brennan's handwritten notes there from that White House meeting detailing what Hillary was about to do, paint Trump with the Russia collusion and whatnot. It has always seemed to me that everything that followed from that meeting, including Comey opening the Crossfire hurricane investigation 3 days after that White House meeting, everything that followed from that point was a lie and propaganda, and I don't understand why Durham and these other investigators hasn't started from that point, from that White House meeting, where the heads of those agencies all met and conspired to move forward. Can you explain why those people are not sitting in jail rather than going after the little guys down the chain who were just taking orders from the people at that meeting who knew better?
No, I can't. And that's one of the more distressing parts of this discussion, if you will, as a whole, is that there are many, many different governmental agencies that were involved in this conspiracy to get Trump. And that's the truth. And, whether you're DR, LGBTQ, I don't care what you are. The bottom line is, you shouldn't want your country to be run like this because, ask not for whom the bell tolls. It was for Trump this time, but it could be for your guy next. And either way, banana republics run like this.
Yes.
The United States does not. And we know for a fact that there were members, high members of the United States government, that were actively involved in trying to take down a legitimately elected president of the United States. Yeah. That to me is treason. Yeah. That to me is a coup d'etat, a failed coup d'etat. And we know for a fact that these people were involved in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Does that lawsuit also name any of the media? Because they played a clear role in this as well.
Yes, it does. I believe it either names ABC or NBC. I'm not sure which affiliate, but that's really what the media has been named. But that's really the co-conspirator here, because right, they knew that the information that they were dissecting. Now they have what's called a privilege to lie, and there's no better way to say it. But they have a privilege to lie under certain circumstances. But You know, here, Trump has said that they colluded with these bad actors sure. to not only propagate the lie, but to destroy him with the propagation. In other words, part of this lawsuit is that they slandered him, they libeled him, and they did. Mm-hmm. And they knew it wasn't true. So this case has got some different aspects to it, but the media is definitely up to their neck in it. And I think the discovery should be of the media as well as to what they knew and when they knew it.
Sure.
Because we know we've been lied to. Sure. And they carried this story for so long, you know, basically hamstrung the entire first half of his presidency because of this crap coming yep. up and the Mueller investigation, et cetera. And it was all fake. And they knew it was fake from day one.
Sure they did. Well, I would go even a step further there and say that the whole Russia collusion narrative could not have happened without the involvement of the media, because otherwise you would have had these investigations going on behind the scenes. Nobody could really know what was going on, but the media was out there amplifying all of it.
Oh, yeah. They were part and parcel of it, and they were running it knowing that it was fake. You know, one of the things that I really have enjoyed lately is watching the downfall and really the collapse of CNN. And, you know, I mean, if you look at their numbers, they're basically teetering on complete joke field, because they ran this every day, all their people ran it. And they basically kept this lie going for the long period of time. And the American public was literally deceived during this entire charade.
Hmm. Oh, absolutely. So you were a former attorney. You've read all 108 pages or so of it. In your professional opinion, what do you think of this case, and do you think it has merit? Do you think it has likelihood of win?
I'll dissect this like this. Do I think it has merit? Yes. I think it absolutely has merit because, you know, I think that the allegations in the case are absolutely true. Now, do I think it's likely to win at this stage? I do not think it's likely to win without going to the appellate courts and having a few of these things tested. Unfortunately, we have a judge here that was appointed by Bill Clinton. Unfortunately, our system allows that same judge to make a decision whether he is going to recuse himself or not. And I believe there's clearly bias here, but, you know, and built-in bias because Bill Clinton appointed him and Hillary Clinton is a named defendant. And, you know, but that said, you know, I do believe that there's causes of action here that will survive. I do believe that the RICO statute was meant to cover these type of acts. And I do believe that we do have, you know, acts by these individuals with the government involved that should be prosecuted civilly and criminally. And the unfortunate part of this is up to this point in time, and we still haven't heard the last word from Durham, but essentially none of these people have been even fazed by this. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been fired or at least forced out of office, but many of them are still, you know, not in any yeah. harm's way.
Still getting their still getting their government paycheck too, you know, pension and whatnot. So sure. you just mentioned something. You said you think some of the cause of interest would survive. What do you mean by that? What especially cause of interest? What is that?
Cause of actions. Other words, there's like 10 different causes of action alleged here, from the wire theft of wire device, trade secrets, things of this nature. I do believe that those will survive. I do believe even if the RICO statute is determined to be, as a matter of law, not actionable under these circumstances, which this judge could rule, it'll go up on appeal, but he could rule in that fashion. But I believe that there are causes of action here which will survive and will cause discovery. In other words, then you can go into a discovery phase where you actually, you know, start taking depositions, start making people admit to documents being produced, start making them take positions. For example, when did you know the lie was there? How much did you pay Hillary to buy this thing? What did the DNC do and when did they do it? Things of that nature. I do believe there will be discovery done on those things, and that is going to be a very interesting phase of this lawsuit too, because those people are going to be, you know, other than the fact that they're going to take the Fifth Amendment, because I think as long as Durham is out there, they know that they have potential legal issues on a criminal side.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Okay, lots more to talk about with author Scott McEwen. He's also a recovering attorney talking about the Trump lawsuit. Everyone stay with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back. We're on our final segment now with Scott McEwen. He's a co-author of American Sniper, and he's also a recovering attorney. We've been talking about the Trump lawsuit there against Hillary, the RICO lawsuit. And so in terms of discovery, we already have rulings on some of these issues. People have already been found guilty of things. Is there any way that they could get around discovery? And what do you imagine that's going to look like, especially since we know that Hillary is more than prone to smashing things and using bleach bit and all sorts of things? And so what happens in this case if suddenly she starts destroying evidence again?
Well, you know, at this stage, I think the evidence would have probably already been destroyed that's going to be destroyed. In other words, you know, what they didn't get a hold of, well, I don't know what's all on Hunter's laptop. We still got that out there. And yes. I mean that somewhat facetiously, but it could be true. I mean, but we do know that they have a series of documents that they obtained that show exactly what happened as far as Hillary and Christopher Steele and the others that were involved in this fake dossier and how that was paid for and things of that nature. So I don't know how much more evidence is necessary, physical evidence that she could destroy, which I'm sure she would, as you and I both know. But, you know, I don't know how much more exists that she could destroy at this stage. It's a matter of admitting to certain things at this stage. In other words, you know, they've got it tied directly to her. They got it tied directly to people, Perkins Coie, the law firm. We know that Sussman now has been indicted. We know that there's been people involved that were involved in this payoff for this stuff. So the question is, what did she know and when did she know it? So she's going to have to at least say, I either knew it or I didn't know it. And if she tries to say she didn't know it, then there's others that have been named here that I believe are going to rat her out.
Or that she doesn't remember. That's her big one.
Well, there's always the, I don't remember. I mean, of course, you know, and she could probably claim she was drunk or drugged or Bill was drunk or drugged or both. And it'd probably be true.
Yeah. Well, you know, as this discovery goes forward, do you see a sudden mass suicide happening?
I don't know about that, man. You know, that's another thing that's out there. Oh, you know, yes. Those lower players had better be careful because this bunch plays for real and they're dangerous.
Absolutely,
we know that from past acts.
Absolutely. So, real quick, the judge that was appointed, it was a Clinton judge, and Trump drew him as part of the lottery. I have always understood that if there's even the appearance of impropriety or conflict of interest, a judge should withdraw. Why isn't he immediately stepping away from this one?
Well, that's exactly it. The designation of what is an appearance of impropriety has become a very loosely fit thing now. And especially in a circumstance like this, where the named defendant is the wife of the guy that appointed him to the bench.
Right.
So, you know,
short of being married to her, I don't know how you could have a more clear conflict of interest.
I don't think you could. And it really should be a judge that was neither appointed by Trump nor Clinton. In other words, it should be that third party judge. Then there's many of them out there that would be in that jurisdiction that could look at this and make a more clear and a less questioned ruling, because really it's about public trust and public sincerity. But, you know, Mark, you know, as much as I've done this for 35 years, I was a lawyer, and how much I love this country and I'm a patriot of this country. We've got some messes to clean up, and this is just one of them. Oh, I mean, this is such a cabal of unfairness, of you know, what rife, you know, acts of blatant conspiracy to go after a sitting president, things of this nature. You know, I'm concerned that this country doesn't have the wherewithal from where we currently sit to really clean this up. And that's one of my biggest, if you will, concerns for my children. Not so much for me, but for my children.
Yeah, absolutely. And this just makes... When you're actively involving the full force of the government and these intelligence agencies in this complete scam, I mean, it totally makes Watergate look like just small potatoes. Yeah. It really does. So in the time that we have left with you, do you have any new books coming up here soon?
I have a book on the Second Amendment that I'm finishing right now. It's going to be an interesting work, particularly in light of what we've seen recently with, you know, the Ukrainians handing out weapons to their citizenry to try and take down the Russian, if you will, aggression back coming into their country.
And wasn't that something seeing the left just jump on that bandwagon suddenly?
Yeah. It was, wasn't it? You know, to see them actually want to arm their citizens against an aggressive foreign power, you know, which is one of the reasons the Second Amendment obviously was out there. And one of the reasons I believe that I'll put in this book that we were not immediately invaded by Japan, because the admiral said one time, look, there's a gun behind every blade of grass in America. I've been there. I lived there. I went to school there. And they know that. And so, you know, I think that part of the Second Amendment is going to be interesting in my next book. And then the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, in my book, City of Death, which was about the liberation of Mosul from possibly one of the worst, you know, groups of people, ISIS, that we've seen in the, you know, in the world since the Nazis. You know, those guys are overdoing work right now. The same group of guys are overdoing work right now, trying to get women and children out of Ukraine and get relief supplies to them. So with all the bad we see in the world, there are good men out there still willing to do jobs for other people. And, you know, it heartens me, and it gives me, you know, great, great pride in the fact that I've written about those type of men, and those men are still out there doing those jobs.
Well, that's really cool. You know, regardless of what you feel about Russia or Ukraine, right, and the politics of everything that's going on there, it's the innocent people getting caught in the middle that is always the, right, the real tragedies of war. Have they told you any specific stories in terms of some of the things that they've had to deal with?
Yeah, they have. They've told me about taking relief supplies in past Russians, and, you know, and it's interesting too, because these guys are warriors to the point where they know that the troops for Russia are conscripted troops too. So, you know, and they realize that this is kind of caught between both sides. In other words, I don't think those Russians want to be there. I certainly know the Ukrainians don't want the Russians there, but, you know, there's powers that be that have forced these issues, and these guys are trying to help the people and the people that are actually caught between these two warring armies. And, you know, they don't take politics into mind. It doesn't matter to them. All they want to do is help the people to try and get out of the war.
Oh, that's really cool. Scott McEwen, he is the co-author of American Sniper, and we list all of his books on iSpy Radio. Just look under the store tab there. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been really fascinating.
Well, thank you, guys. I love getting back on. I love having a conservative voice in Oregon, because I've seen some polls, and I just heard some more from you guys before we started on. And you know what? I'm going to take that state back, and it's going to be back to where it was when we were out there, when it was a conservative, smart group of people that, you know, loved the environment, loved to not see trees burn, and could still make business and money off of a beautiful landscape.
Your lips to God's ears, that's for sure. Thanks, Scott.
Take it easy.
You know, people do go to jail for lying to prosecutors or making false statements to investigators. So why isn't Hillary in jail right now? The entire Russia collusion narrative was one giant lie told to investigators. And getting back to Angela's segments and the relentless attack on our kids, people have said that maybe it's time teachers wear body cams like the police are forced to wear. Maybe. But maybe it's time for kids to wear body cams to keep those creeps away from our kids and to know exactly who is saying what to them. Remember the strategy we talked about last week. If you're in a safe district, meaning any Republican is likely to win in the general, or you're in a district where the Republican has no chance, put your support and energies into a district that might go Republican if only they had more help. In Oregon, for U.S. Congress, that's districts 4, 5, and 6. Help them win where they otherwise wouldn't, but for your support. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.